Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at Lavrov's visit to Washington. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov paid a reciprocal visit to D.C. to meet with his U.S. counterpart Rex Tillerson in order to pave the way for President Putin's future meeting with Trump. The American Secretary of State had just traveled to Moscow last month, and Lavrov's trip indicates that there are serious efforts underway to maintain and enhance the bilateral dialogue between the two great powers. The U.S. and Russia have plenty that they disagree on all across the world, be it in Ukraine, Syria, Afghanistan, or the Koreas. But there's a lot that they could cooperate on if the right conditions and political will were present. For example, both sides are engaged in anti-terrorist operations in the Mideast, which could provide a basis for future collaboration in line with the model first proposed by President Putin during a September 2015 speech at the UN General Assembly. Up until now, however, the U.S. has steadfastly refused to join hands with Russia in fighting Daesh, though an historic breakthrough might be possible during a future meeting between the Russian and American presidents. It's up to each leader's top diplomat to arrange the summit, and that was one of the reasons behind why Lavrov traveled to meet with Tillerson in D.C. Before departing on his trip, Russia's foreign minister stressed that any prospective meeting between Presidents Putin and Trump would have to yield concrete results and be important not only for the sake of shaking hands and hearing what they think about their relations with each other and international problems. Of all the disagreements present along the wide geostrategic spectrum of Russian-American relations, the one which provides the best hope for paving the way for a tangible rapprochement between the two is Syria. And it's here where Moscow's de-escalation zone proposal might come into play. The U.S. has thus far been lukewarm towards Russia's initiative, but it also hasn't dismissed it outright. So it can be inferred that some progress has already been made through diplomatic back channels in getting Washington to respect Moscow's peacemaking moves, or at least for the time being. The challenge ahead is to sustain these gains and transform them into the basis for practical cooperation between Russia and the U.S., preferably as part of a united anti-terrorist coalition against Daesh. While it might be premature to speculate that far into the future, Lavrov's visit to Washington is nevertheless a timely moment to discuss the current direction of Russian-American relations. So folks, for this section of Trendstorm, we're joined exclusively by Joseph Davis. He's an independent blogger and researcher based in Memphis, Tennessee, and he runs the website jdavismemphis.com.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Joseph, Lavrov has now reciprocated Tillerson's visit to Moscow, and both trips were reported on pretty positively by each other's media. So what does this tell us about the willingness of both countries' leaderships to go forward with the new détente?
It's interesting. You know, anytime that the U.S. and Russia are going to work together and agree to things peacefully, that's a great thing. But honestly, I'd like to dig below the surface a little bit. I mean, you know, Lavrov in the press conference, and, you know, to me, he's a funny guy. But, you know, in his press conference, he mentioned that, you know, things were different with the Obama administration and now with Trump. And you saw this in some of the press reporting on his conference and visit, you know, positioning it as, you know, Trump is, and his people were more businesslike, and Obama, you know, they were different, and we can work with Trump. But, you know, to me, it's a little strange because, you know, of recent events. I mean, we had, you know, that chemical weapons attack that the Trump administration immediately blamed on Assad with no proof, and then bombed Syria illegally without congressional approval. I mean, I immediately called my reps, and they all agreed with what Trump did, even though they hadn't approved it, which is crazy. And then we had the, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it Astana agreement? Am I saying Astana right?
Yeah. The Astana agreement.
Astana agreement. Like, so basically, you had that right after, you know, Trump bombs Syria. And, you know, which is a little sketchy to me, you know, why are we in Syria? You know, what is this war all about? We have the, you know, what's being presented to us in the Western press as a, you know, a revolution, people rising up against Assad. But, you know, if you've read any of these, you know, foreign policy papers, you know, especially Israel's, you know, it looks like the end goal no matter who's in charge of the U.S. Or who's president. So, I mean, the goal is Israel's goal, which is to break up Syria into, you know, many statelets along ethnic religious lines, you know, via the, you know, the infamous Yenom plan, and pave the way for regional hegemony for Israel. So, you know, that is always in the back of my mind, no matter what's, you know, being played out PR-wise, with whether it be Russia or, you know, Lavrov, I mean, excuse me, Russia or the Trump administration and Tillerson. So that, to me, is always first and foremost. So, you know, it's, you know, on the surface level, we're being presented that, you know, Russians can work with Trump is what we're being told right now. But I still think the end goal is to break up Syria. I'm skeptical of the Astana agreement. Right now, it seems to be in the short term good for Syria, who's agreed to it. I don't know if they were part of the agreement. I think it was Turkey, Iran, and Russia, from what I've read. But, you know, right now, it's freeing up the Syrian Arab Army resources to fight, you know, eastward, if the agreement holds.
Trendstorm. We're joined exclusively by Joseph Davis. He's an independent blogger and researcher based in Memphis, Tennessee, and he runs the website jdavismemphis.com. Okay, well, the next thing I want to ask you, though, Joseph, is if we can transition a bit. You spoke about, you know, just below the surface. You mentioned that a couple times. And if we go below the surface, we know that, of course, there's been a lot of deep state opposition to Trump working with Russia. I mean, he campaigned on a promise to restore pragmatic ties with Russia, but he's been slow to deliver on it because of all this opposition. But even though with all that going on, we still saw Tillerson going to Moscow last month, now Lavrov going to D.C. So what happened over the past 30 days or so? I mean, ironically, since Trump happened to actually bomb Syria, that made this progress possible in such a short amount of time.
Well, I mean, I think that they, you know, Russia is looking at this, you know, pragmatically. It's, hey, he's going against what he's originally said. He's doing what he's basically told by the deep state, which, you know, is basically, you know, these Lakudnik neocon warmongers. You know, twisting his arm, whether they're twisting his arm or he's just a puppet, an actor just going along, you know, that's up for speculation, but that's for the individual to decipher, I guess. But it seems like that's kind of brought them to the table, in my opinion. Hey, you know, I'm going to stick, you know, to the Assad must go or Assad's the bad guy kind of thing, even though I said all this stuff when I was campaigning, and even after he got in office, you know, he went on, I forgot, what was it, CBS morning show with Charlie Rose, and, I mean, Trump was saying some great things about what was going on in Syria. Like, we don't know who these rebels are. I mean, we know they're terrorists, but, you know, he was kind of putting that out there, and then, you know, there's so many things he's gone back on, and, you know, it just seems to me that, you know, after the chemical weapons attack, and he goes and immediately blames Assad, which is crazy. He knows better. I mean, in my opinion, how can you look at it? Like, look at everything he said before, and then all of a sudden he's saying Assad did this, and he's bombing Syria illegally. We're not even supposed to be there, period, without congressional approval. So we're there illegally. Russia's there legally. So, you know, it just seems like, look, Andrew, you brought this up in your own, the two really good articles you had. I forgot the publication of the first one, but it was immediately after the Astana agreement where you kind of questioned, you know, is this the mission creep towards partitioning Syria? And then you had a follow-up in the Duran, you know, and a big, well, not a big piece of it, but the way the Duran positioned it when they posted it was like, you know, the Israeli factor. And to go a little further, and you and I have had a little back and forth in this in the comment section about Russia, and you've written about this, about Russia's relationship with Israel. So, and we need to pay attention to that. And, you know, who is kind of guiding things behind the curtain, if you will, between, you know, the hidden hand, I guess, and how much is Israel playing into this? Because your last article talked about, too, will Israel, you know, they're not a part of these talks or the agreement. Will they stop bombing those areas? You know, Israel's been, we don't. And it'll be interesting, you know, if it holds, great. But, you know, it just, you see this ebb and flow, you know, things seem to get better. for this on, and they start to win, and then something happens, and they start to lose, and then, you know, it's like, I don't even know, and a lot of other people smarter than I have written about how, and talked about how, you know, the goal maybe not even to be to get rid of Assad, it's just to continue the fighting. It's good for, you know, the military-industrial complex. It prevents, you know, any sort of pipeline deals, you know, competing Eastern pipeline deals from going through Syria. And, you know, and so it's very nuanced.
Trendstorm.
We're joined exclusively by Joseph Davis. He's an independent blogger and researcher based in Memphis, Tennessee. And he runs the website jdavismemphis.com. So what I'd like to ask you, though, if we just build upon that, though, Joseph, if we build upon that with Syria, I mean, this seems to be the focal point, not only of our discussion and our interest, but also in terms of what the U.S. and Russia talked about when Lavrov went to D.C. So, I mean, this seems to be a very promising, but also the riskiest theater for a Russian-American approachment, as we've been talking about, as I wrote about, and as you've also commented on. So how do you evaluate the prospects that both of these sides can finally find some common ground in the Mideast and will take some tangible steps towards cooperating there, whether before or after, you know, President Putin and Trump meet in early July?
You know, I don't know. Andrew, I hate to sound like a pessimist, like, but until, I mean, I see... you know, I go back to, and you mentioned it, I think, in a previous article, and a lot of people kind of posted, what was it, the UN Assembly in 2015, where Putin basically called out the U.S. for backing terrorists and even ISIS. You know, I would like to, you don't see a lot of that anymore. It's like they're just trying to kind of work things out, smooth things over. But, like, the bottom line is, you know, it needs to be put out by everybody that the U.S. is there illegally. Like, I'm calling my reps. I'm telling them, like, get out of Syria. You know, please sign, like, agree with or push for Tulsi Gabbard's the Stop Arming Terrorists Act. At the Astana agreement, you know, you had the rebel, but the moderate leadership there, and they walk out, and it's like there's no moderates there. These are conduits to these terrorist groups. Being fully backed by the U.S., NATO, Israel, and the GCC allies. And so until that gets called out, until that enters, like, enough of the public's mind, and, you know, here in the U.S., especially in Western press, which doesn't seem like that's going to happen, but I wish it would, know how this is going to pan out. It seems like, you know, with Obama, you know, I think the goal was the same, which is Israel's plan or Likudnik's plan for breaking up Syria. And, you know, with Trump, I think that it's the same thing. It's just maybe different strategies are being implemented. Maybe it's a more peaceful way to kind of introduce this, you know, mission creep, as you put it in your first article after Astana, like, agreement. A mission creep towards that goal. So, again, very nuanced. I don't know how that's going to pan out, you know, without still widespread violence and death and on the Syrian people, unfortunately. But, you know, I just want to see our government out of Syria. I want to see our allies out of Syria. I want to see the U.S. break all ties with Israel in this stranglehold they have of our government. And, you know, and break all ties with Saudi Arabia. I mean, that one is so obvious. You know, these are two religious nutter states that we've got to break away from. Who, by the way, Andrew, if we go back in history of where Syria is at and what happened to Iraq and what's going on in Afghanistan, we have to go back to September 11, 2001, and what happened then and what really happened then. You know, we know the cover story. But who was really involved in that, and who's benefiting from it right now? And the number one state would be Israel. So, again, I know there's a lot of speculation with what I just said, but that's my position, is that they were the main player involved, and they're the biggest beneficiary, and they're the ones driving the current U.S. policy in Syria, whether that's Obama or Trump. Again, maybe mixing up strategies to get there, but we also know that Netanyahu and Putin, as you and I both pointed out, have a pretty solid relationship, you know, Russia in general with Israel. And, you know, look at, you know, Heinz Kissinger and Putin. So it's concerning, although I will say I much prefer Putin and what they're doing in Syria and understand it a lot more. They're actually fighting terrorists. And I prefer he and Lavrov to John Kerry or Obama or Tillerson and Trump, by the way. But at the same time, it's concerning about those relationships with Israel on both sides and what that means.
Well, there's definitely a lot going on. I think we can agree that. I mean, there's a lot of complex diplomacy, a lot of stuff going on that doesn't necessarily make the public until after the fact. But, you know, Joseph, we're winding down on time, so I want to thank you for coming on the program. I think we really described the main issue that's going to be at the forefront of the upcoming Putin-Trump meeting in early July. Thanks a lot for coming on Trendstorm, and I was really happy to have you on our program today. Thank you.
Trendstorm.
Okay then, folks. Now, if we reflect a lot on what Joseph shared with us today during our conversation, I think that we can really reach the conclusion that, you know, Syria, that's going to be the fulcrum. I mean, Russian-American relations are going to be increasingly dependent on what happens in that battle space. Will the U.S. cooperate with Russia in fighting Daesh? Will it obstruct the situation like what it did in September 2016 when they bombed the Syrian Arab Army in Deir ez-Zor and sabotaged peace efforts during that time? I mean, what's going to happen? But we don't know yet. But what we can say is that there's a lot to be hopeful for, at least cautiously. I have cautious optimism. But then again, a lot can happen in the month and a half before President Putin and Trump's meeting. So we'll just have to keep our eyes on this and hope for the best. All right, folks. Well, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, a very interesting and deep topic, as well as Joseph's thoughts on the matter, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.